friends are heathens, take it slow. Wait for them to ask you who you know. Please don't make any sudden moves. You don't know the half of the abuse. All my friends are heathens, take it slow. For them to ask you who you know. Please don't make any sudden moves. You don't know the half of the abuse. Welcome to the room of people who have rooms of people that they love one day docked away. Just because we check the guns at the door doesn't mean our brains will change from hand grenades. You love another psychopath sitting next to you. You love another murderer sitting next to you. You think I'd get it sitting next to you. But after all I've said, please don't forget. All my friends are heathens, take it slow. Wait for them to ask you who you know. Please don't make any sudden moves. You don't know. Deal with outsiders very well. They say newcomers have a certain smell. Yeah, trust issues not to mention. They say they can smell your intentions. You love another freak show sitting next to you. You love some weird people sitting next to you. You think I did not get here sitting next to you. But after all I've said, please don't forget. Friends are heathens, take it slow. Wait for them to ask you who you know.
All right, once again, thanks for tuning in to the It's Going Down podcast. Today we're excited to bring you two people from across the country, one in New York and one in Portland, Oregon, in the Pacific Northwest, to talk about organizing that's going on where they live, where they work, and talking about how they're facing repression from the bosses for their organizing and also how they're countering it and fighting back with their coworkers. First, we're going to talk with Jordan, who was recently fired from his workplace. He's with the Burgerville Workers Union. You might remember that group back in October. We interviewed them. He's going to be talking about how he was recently fired over a fucking bagel and also how they've responded to that firing and also how Burgerville Workers Union is stronger than ever. Then we're going to hear from Stardust Family United, another group of the IWW out in New York City, how they're organizing, how they're dealing with mass firings, and how they're fighting back. You know, one thing that really, really stands out about millennial life is that, you know, we work several jobs for less and less pay. We work more and more hours. We're constantly searching around on Craigslist to find something that will put food on the table. And these are people that are in exactly the same situation in service industry jobs that are getting organized on the shop floor and fighting back. Not waiting for big top-down business unions that are in league with Trump or the Democrats to do it for them, but getting organized themselves. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to support It's Going Down. It'sgoingdown.org. Check us out. Thanks a lot. Okay, we're talking today with Jordan from Burgerville Workers Union out in Portland, Oregon. So Jordan, someone gave you a bagel and something happened. So tell us what happened. You were at work. People that listen to the IGD cast already know that the Burgerville Workers Union is this autonomous union, part of the Industrial Workers of the World, which is a revolutionary anti-capitalist union. It's spread out in several stores in the Pacific Northwest. And you are, from what I understand, the most recent kind of targeted firing by Burgerville management. So can you just tell us what's been going on in your life the past couple of weeks? How did you end up getting fired? Because it's kind of a really out there story.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. So early January, I was just working my normal shift. I was actually about to go on vacation next week in a couple days. And so I was like looking forward to that. You know, I had my manager make me a bagel for my first break, my morning break, because I work opening shifts. And so he made me the bagel. I ate it on my break, didn't really think anything of it. Till the next day, my general manager came up to me and he asked me to tell him about the bagel incident. Yeah. And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about, actually. So you're going to have to tell me. He was like, well, you know, we were informed by HR that, yesterday you took a bagel and you didn't pay for it. And I was like, all right. Well, you know, sorry. Like I'm more than happy to pay for it. And he was like, well, you know, unfortunately, since you violated policy, we're going to have to put you on suspension pending an HR investigation. I was like, all right, well, I mean, are you telling me to go home right now? And he was like, yeah, sorry, you have to go home right now. And I was like, all right. So, I mean, totally caught me off guard, right? Like, basically, like my manager had made me this bagel and instead of.
And this is something that happened,
Oh, this totally. Happens, right? Because, you know, like our breaks are like the 10 minutes long. You know, they want us to like set this timer when we go on our break. And according to policy, you're supposed to like set the timer, go out in front of the counter, order your food. And, you know, it takes, I don't know, like 5+ minutes or whatever to make your food. Right. And then you have to like scarf it down once they bring it to you. So like the common practice is to like have somebody on grill start your food for you. So it's all ready for you to eat. Right.
Right.
Seems like a reasonable thing. And so in this instance, I had forgotten to pay for the bagel and my manager had also forgotten to charge me for the bagel. And instead of approaching me like a decent human being and being like, well, you know, Jordan, like looks like you forgot to pay for your bagel. Do you want to pay for it now? He decided to report it, to HR. And I mean, more accurately, I think he reported it to the person, from corporate that's been in our store trying to bust the union. And then she reported it to HR. But you know,
and this is like a $3 bagel, right? I mean, how much is it?
Oh, it was, with my discount, it was 70 cents.
Oh my God. So a 70 mm-hmm. cent bagel. And I mean, common practices is what that the manager rings you up or how does it usually work in this situation?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the official policies you're supposed to like, go start your break, go around the counter, order it like a customer, right? But in practice, you know, they start your food and then you go up to the counter behind the counter. The manager rings it up with their manager card because they need that to give you the discount. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they charge you for it and then you take your food and you go sit down and eat it. But, you know, it was like really – it was a super busy morning. We're always understaffed. Mm-hmm. And so it was like a rush had just ended. I had had him make my bagel and I was like, all right, I'm going on my break. Cause you know, I need a break. It's stressful. But right. Yeah.
And this is a classic example of a high stress, you know, high volume environment where you're working very fast. I'm assuming like you're making the food right at the fast food restaurant.
Yeah, I actually work drive through. Okay. So I'm like expediting the food, taking the orders, taking payments all at the same time, you know, running back and forth.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's high stress.
But it's just – it's shitty because it's like there are these special rules that like are designed – you know, how it's supposed to be. But then there are these real rules that allow the restaurant to actually function as such and for people to actually sit down for 10 minutes. Because if the real rules were in place, you know, nothing would work and no one would get a break and, you know, which exactly. they would be fine with. But, you know, it's so clear that they did this and then all of a sudden – basically they messed up. So they said, oh, okay. You know, now's right. our chance. And have you, I mean, it's very clear to Burgerville management that you're a union organizer, you're a political person.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been one of the most active union members in my store. I've participated in, all sorts of on the job actions, both, like at my store as well as at the corporate offices, as well as other stores. So, you know, they knew who I was. They knew what I stood for, you know, and they saw their opportunity and they took it.
I mean, it just I mean, most people that would hear that, I think, would just, you know, just be totally. I mean, it's not shocking that someone gets fired for union organizing, but I mean.
Right.
OK, so this happened. I'm sure you were just like, oh, my God, this is so crazy. But probably at the same time, you're like, oh, sweet, I get to go home.
Right. A little bit. Yeah. I was like, all right. But at the same time, I was like, you know, they told me that Friday I was like 5 hours away from going on vacation. Exactly. My first vacation in like a year and a half. And, you know, I was like, I don't know. I was kind of pissed off because I was like, they like ruined my vacation. Now I have to like sit around and wait for this HR investigation to happen.
Because you didn't know, like, did your vacation, was it void at that point because of that?
I didn't know it was going to happen. I mean, I wasn't on the schedule for the next week, so there was no opportunity for me to work, even though I had to stay in town, you know?
Right.
So I had requested this time off. I didn't know it was going to happen. And you know, they were slow with their HR investigation. All there was, like, there were only like four people there total. One of my coworkers they interviewed like that following Monday. And you know, they just kind of like drug it out as long as they could to probably, you know, I don't know. They had some sort of strategy behind it, I'm sure. As well as, you know, it was like 2 weeks until they ended up actually firing me. I think the weather did play into that somewhat. Cause it got real icy and snowy. There was a whole winter storm here in the Portland area. And of course, like, my coworkers had to go to work, but the bosses couldn't be bothered to go down to corporate to make a decision, you know?
Right.
So, you know, that's how that goes.
So take us through the process. What happened? What was the response by Burgerville Workers Union once you were fired?
So immediately we started doing actions. We started – we did a soapboxing action where we had folks go into Burgervilles all across the area with megaphones and – you know, talk to soapbox to customers about the situation and what was going on. We started leafleting stores. We just started trying to get the word out and make people aware of, like, what was going on while I was on suspension, hoping that, you know, hoping to, like, put some pressure on them to scare them away from firing me. And honestly, at that point, we didn't think they were going to fire me. I only had one write-up. They didn't have a lot. Like, it's a pretty weak case on their part sure. From our view. As far as, you know, we immediately filed a unfair labor practice with the National Labor Relations Board.
Ongoing, or is that finished too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a slow process. It's something we rely on as a tool, but not it's not exactly like the most powerful tool to sure. build work power, right? But you know, it's, you got to use everything at your disposal, and you know, down the road, you know, there is a chance that I'll be able to get my job back or something like that. Mm-hmm. But you know, we'll see how that goes. In the immediate it was more about putting pressure on them to scare them away from firing me. In the end, it was about 2 weeks. It was January 18th that they ended up calling me and telling me that I was fired. Basically they were super cold about it. The head of HR called me up and ran through their list of evidence or whatever. And
the bagel
you admitted to taking a bagel and not paying for it, and according to Burgerville policy that qualifies as theft and all this stuff. And then my general manager got on the phone and was like, well, you know, because of all these reasons we're gonna have to terminate you. And I was like, all right, you know, I look forward to like following up with you soon. So so the next day, you know, that night we got together and planned an action. Where the next day we got, 40 plus people, went in and occupied my store, had some megaphones and did some more soapboxing about the situation. I reapplied for my job back, demanded to talk to my manager. All in all, we were in the store for probably like 40 minutes. The cops showed up, probably like 25, 30 minutes in, and then went back and talked to my manager and, you know, got the lowdown on the situation. And then there were, all in all, like 12 cops showed up. It was pretty interesting. And then they, you know, formed formed this line, kind of like you would see it, like riot cops would make it like a protest and like forced us all out of the store.
And so,
you know, I told them that I, you know, wasn't going to leave until like I got to talk to my manager about getting my job back, who was refusing to talk to me and was refusing to make a call to my general manager. So I was, you know, I was like standing in front of the doors, I was talking to one of the cops, and he was like, well, you know, like if you don't leave, like we're going to have to arrest you. And I was like, well, I want to do is like talk to my manager about getting my job back. And
this was only to you, right? It wasn't to anybody else that was in the store.
Yeah. Yeah. At that point we were all standing outside the doors. We were all still on the property and they were telling us to get off. But, so I was like, you know, talking to this cop, and I was like, you know, all I want to do is like talk to my manager about getting my job back. And he was like, well, you know, and go in and talk to your manager one more time. If he wants you to leave, like, I'm going to have to like ask you to leave or arrest you. And I was like, well, okay. And then like, as like we were having that conversation, one of the other cops came up and he was like, no way. Like we already told him to leave. Like he's arrested right now. And they arrested me and put me in the squad car and, you know, did the whole deal.
Okay. So there was that. And to be clear, you were basically cited and released.
Yeah, yeah, I got lucky. Their computer froze up, so they couldn't book. Yeah, so I got lucky there. I didn't have to spend any time overnight in jail or anything. Okay. So, you know, that was a little bit of a lucky break, but you know they charged me with criminal trespassing in the first degree, so that's what I'm facing legally in that regard. Mm-hmm.
So what happened after that? There was more actions that happened, right? Including a fairly large picket.
Yeah. Yeah. We continued to do some leafleting. And then we planned a picket for just a week later. We chose to do it at the convention center store, which is, one of their highest earning stores. Mm-hmm. And it was also, a big game night. So that convention center store is right down by where the Blazers play, and it was like 40th anniversary of the founding of the Blazers. It was a Blazers Lakers game night, so it was like pretty big night and like probably one of their highest earning nights of the year. We organized a picket in under a week with over 100 people there. It was pretty great. Burgerville tried to shut us down on multiple fronts. They actually called it, so like at our picket for our 6 month celebration that we did at the convention center, we, you know, the carpenters, the local carpenters, 1503 local, has been like a huge help to us. Last time at that picket, they set us up with like a trailer where they had grills set up, and, you know, so we were like dissuading customers from going into the store and like serving them free burgers. And so this time around they called the health department on us. And luckily the health department called us earlier and, you know, told us, they were like, left a voicemail for us, told us we were going to have to like apply for a temporary restaurant permit, and get everything all set up, you know? So we were kind of like in a little bit of a panic mode, but we ended up pulling it all off. It was great. We had some people rush down there, apply for the permit. We have, we gathered together all the sanitizer and all that stuff. It turned out great. They sent the health inspector out there, and she was like super helpful. She was like, you know, health inspectors belong to a union. I totally like respect what you guys are doing here. So
For everybody listening, to be clear, like during this large picket a week after you were fired at this mm-hmm. major store, you were basically serving free food outside of the restaurant, basically like, fuck you, you know, don't go in, exactly. don't buy, eat our food instead.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the response from the public was like, both times we've done it has been great. You know, people for one thing love free food, and for another thing, like most people don't want to shop somewhere where like shitty stuff is going on, you know. So you know, we totally emptied the store. Awesome. And, you know, I think only one car was determined enough to try and cross our picket line, which, you know, apparently they really wanted some Burgerville. So
I just think that's so – I mean, that's so awesome that – I mean, not only just the big picket and the community response, but basically just saying, like, look, we'll just do this ourselves. Like, we, you know, mm-hmm. as a way to, like, attack the company. I just think that's – I mean, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's kind of like a beautiful thing, you know. We have like, we have the Carpenter's help us set up the grill and like the trailer and stuff. But you know, we had Burgerville grill cooks out there in uniform, you know, making Tillamook cheeseburgers, and
you had rat too.
Yep, we had Scabby the Rat. Scabby the Rat made an appearance. Yep.
Right.
So. Yeah.
What's if you want to explain to people that may not know the symbolism behind the rat and why that's important? It's usually a mainstay at a lot of union and labor protests.
Yes. Scabby the Rat. I mean, I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with the term scab or somebody who like crosses a picket line, right? So Scabby the Rat is generally, oftentimes like pulled out at pickets in particular where like. There's workers that are working inside that are scabs, but, you know, like, it's common for people to, you know, call anybody, customer, whoever, who crosses a picket line, a scab. So, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's just another piece of that is like, it's a pretty unpleasant sight to have in front of your restaurant, a big, like, ugly rat, inflatable rat, you know?
Right.
So it's just another thing to dissuade people from shopping there, you know? So
what kind of organization and outreach goes into getting 100 people to show up for a fast food worker that's been fired? I mean, what goes into creating those relationships and making sure that people will come out and support you?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a lot of work, from the very beginning, since before we went public through now. It's been, you know, reaching out to other unions, other local community groups, you know, seeking endorsements, and then like building relationships, with, membership and leadership in those organizations, to like get people to like commit to, turning out to our events and like, trying to help them understand why it's important for fast food workers to organize. And honestly, like, we've been really lucky because like, all those organizations that we've reached out to, it's not like we had to like do some big convincing, you know. There's a lot of support behind what we're doing, and there's a lot of people out there that want to see us succeed, for a number of reasons. And you know, part of it has been just like doing outreach to the public too, personal networks, that kind of thing. So we just basically, you know, pool all our resources, and we're pretty fortunate. That we're, you know, we have the connections and people who support us that, you know, we can turn out over 100 people in less than a week.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it's great. And you know, I think that's something that Burgerville, you know, they saw our 6-month picket, and you know, I don't know if they were sure if we could pull something off like that again, and much less in like less than a week. But you know, I think what we saw that day is like, they were scared. You know, we overheard the general manager on the phone to corporate, being like, you know, like, you don't even understand, like, we're losing so much money right now, like, you know, y'all have to do something, you know. So yeah,
we'll take, you know, let's you know, we talked to members of Burgerville about 5 months ago in October, and you know, what's changed since then? Like, do you feel like, because I mean, you know, one of the things that was articulated in the last interview, which I totally agree with, it's not about the state or the company recognizing the union per se. It's about the relationships that are formed and the ability of workers on the job to physically do things, you know, in their own interest. But what do you think has changed since October? Has the company, I mean, do you think they're at some point going to try to recognize the union or try to make a deal? Or do you think that they're just at this point still continuing to be like, you know, get rid of them at any chance we get?
Yeah, I think I mean, that's their mentality. I think from the beginning, they were kind of like hoping we would just kind of like go away or fade away. Mm-hmm. you know, we're like a small, scrappy organization. And I think they thought they were kind of placing their bets on us going away. You know, we recently found out who their union busting law firm is, who's Bullard Law, who's a somewhat notorious union busting law firm in the Portland area. Notably, like, busted up the local the organizing at a local community radio station, KBOO, a couple years ago. And, you know, they kind of have this image that kind of like goes hand in hand with Burgerville, like with their, like, they do things to, like, support the, like, environment and local economy and all these kinds of, you know, bullshit corporate.
I'm looking at their website right now, and they says labor law is at the heart of what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They specialize in union avoidance.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, nice way to say that, I suppose. Yeah. So, and, you know, we've seen them step up their game. They had some private security goons out at our picket, trying to bust it up, they were filming us, you know, trying to catch us on whatever. They're definitely, like, stepping up their, like, public, anti-union presence. And interestingly, one of those goons was the same one who claimed to be a private investigator when my coworker Ivy, back in July, they tried to frame her with thousands of dollars of gift card theft, and then told her
it's a lot of bagels.
Yeah, a lot of bagels, especially at 70 cents. They told her that she couldn't tell anybody, including her parents, or, like, she had to quit and not tell anybody, including her parents, her roommates who also worked at Burgerville, or else they were gonna, like, prosecute her with, like, a felony charge. So that's how they, you know, that's how Burgerville plays. They try to put on this, like, nice face, right? But then they, like, find any underhanded way to, like, bust us up and fire us that they can.
And the sad thing is, at a certain point, if it becomes too costly for them, they probably will decide to try to work with the union and then, you know, create some sort of relationship in that instance that makes sense to them. I don't know. It's disgusting, really.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, back in October, we were like, you know, it's been 6 months. It's time to start ramping things up. Like, it's time to stop playing nice. And so now it's about, you know, putting economic pressure on them, you know, making it cheaper and easier for them to work with us than against us. And, you know, like you were saying earlier, we're not seeking recognition by the state, at least not at this point, for a number of reasons, most notably because it doesn't really get us what we want. Right. Like, we could get certification, but then we're just entered into bargaining and we're kind of in the same spot that we're at now.
Right.
It doesn't get us a good contract. It doesn't get us any of the things we really need. So it's like workers who are self-organizing, you know, we see working outside that process, at least for the time being, as, like, the most effective means for that. So,
yeah. And I mean, the potential of that to spread too, and to start to engage other workplaces is, I mean, that's where it's at. It's not about
Right.
Some slow, legalistic, play-by-the-rules
right.
type thing.
Right.
You know, and I brought this up to the person that you'll hear in the next segment of this this podcast, somebody from the Stardust Family United Union, part of the IWW in New York. But,
Yeah. You
know, in this period where a lot of mainstream business unions are actually slashing millions of dollars from their budget and, like, firing organizers, from what I understand, because of what they see coming under Trump, and because union membership and the official mainstream unions is declining, and also in the face of, like, right-to-work laws and stuff like that. It's just, I don't know, it's really heartening to basically see this stuff kind of go back to what it's always been about in its roots, you know, people self-organizing where they're at, not waiting for the state to recognize them or the business, but, you know, just really forming those relationships.
Yeah, totally, yeah. I mean, like, on one hand, like, it's a little bit scary to, like, think that, you know, tools that we've relied on through, like, the National Labor Relations Board, you know, like, who knows what's going to happen with that kind of stuff? Who knows where, like, you know, I feel, you know, like, unfair labor practice charges that we file, or, you know, once Trump gets to appoint his two members to the National Labor Relations Board, you know, who knows what's going to happen. But it's just one thing's for sure is that it's going to have like even fewer teeth and even fewer or even less powerful for workers, you know.
Do you think that yeah. will have a radicalizing effect on, I mean, both, you know, quote, the labor movement and just workers in general, now that they see like this kind of like supposed safety net is gone and that basically their only hope is to fight back? Or do you think that'll make people more complacent and scared?
You know, I think and hope that it will, I will have a radicalizing effect. You know, we're actually, you know, in the process of reaching out to other unions in our area, talking about, in order to like talk about, what, you know, Trump and this new administration is going to mean for the labor movement and, how we see, or what we see as like alternative methods of organizing that don't rely on those kinds of things.
And so, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's basically going to be up to them, right? Like they can either, seek out those alternative methods and, or they can, you know, slowly die off. So,
do you think that there are people within the labor movement that are starting to come around to another, vision of what that would look like? Cause I mean, anybody that's been in a large or even small union knows that just like, I mean, most union leadership is all about creating, you know, social peace with the bosses and kind of, you know, helping along austerity measures or cuts and, yeah. you know, basically just being that kind of like, you know, legalistic conduit between management and labor.
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, that's the whole like National Labor Relations Board process, right? Like in the National Labor Relations Act, it says like the stated purpose of the act is to keep labor peace between the like the workers and the bosses, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, yeah, I mean, we just on a personal level, like people within those organizations, we've seen. I think there's definitely like a shift to more a more radical organizing tactics. Because I mean, the only other option is to like fade away, because like all those protections, all those tools through the National Labor Relations Board are fading away. So yeah, I mean, we've seen that. I think we've also seen. I hope we've also like inspired folks, and I think we've seen evidence of that through the massive support we've got through from, you know, other unions in the area. So yeah, totally.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit to you all are starting a new program that for members of the Burgerville Workers Union, they get a discount on food, a discount on childcare, and things like that. Can you tell us a little bit about what this program is, what inspired it, and what do people get if they're part of Burgerville?
Yeah, totally. So we're calling it our union benefits program. And some of the things are available to members. Some of them are available to Burgerville workers who aren't members too. So, you know, we're offering babysitting up to once, sometimes twice a month if we can swing it, for, you know, up to 4 hours. And that's at no cost. We are offering food boxes for folks that need them. We've organized a lot around organizations that are willing to support us in that area, you know, like whether they're churches or whatever sort of organization that, you know, is down to like provide help in that way. So that's been super helpful. So we're utilizing those resources. We are offering subsidized bus passes for folks, which is interesting. You know, most Burgerville workers, most minimum wage workers don't have cars and, you know, rely on public transportation to get around. So that's a huge help for folks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of this vision, you know, was like a lot of these were like part of our demands. In our demands when we went public, we wanted like subsidized public transportation, which is something that like a lot of companies offer. So our vision for this is to kind of like start providing for ourselves what we can here and now, as well as like demonstrating that like the like if we as like this tiny organization can provide this for ourselves, like there's no reason that Burgerville can't take this up in you know, a couple months or whatever. Mm-hmm. And other things we're offering to non-members too are like GED prep courses. So we've got people that are teachers or, you know, tutors or whatever that are interested in helping out folks who are like seeking out their GED. And then we also have we're launching our grievance hotline, which is a number for any Burgerville worker to call if their boss is doing something fucked up. You know, they can call and we'll talk to them about what kind of response we can organize and how we can solve the issue as Burgerville workers. And you know, that the hope with that is to like bring people in who you know, might be from like an outlying area or whatever, who might not have had any contact with the union, because you know, turnover is like so high in this company. It's mm-hmm. Somewhere around 80% a year. Mm-hmm. So you know, even if we're doing, you know, constant flyering to these stores, you know, there's always workers that haven't had contact with us. Right. So you know, we want to like open up the line to like for them to be able to call us if something messed up is happening, and for us to be able to demonstrate like what we can do for them and what we can do for each other, you know. Yeah,
it's just super exciting to just hear and see that happened. I mean, this is what, you know, the traditional radical confrontational working class labor movement in the United States, you know, originally was about creating these kind of dual power structures. And definitely if you look back at, like, for instance, the Spanish anarchist movement, you know, 80, 90 years ago, I mean, this is what people were doing, was building up counter institutions, ways that working people could address problems themselves. You know, this kind of mixture of living and fighting, taking care of each other, but also coming together to fight back.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, like, the boss isn't always going to be there to provide for us. Hopefully, cause hopefully someday we won't have any bosses. Right. Yeah. So it's like, it's great to be able to like, start to build that kind of support for each other here and now, and help people understand that like that's what this is all about.
Totally. Well, Jordan, just for you, I mean, what's going to happen with you? I mean, because you've put your heart and soul into this struggle, and it must be hard in some ways to not be at work with your coworkers. I mean, do you have hope that you will be rehired? What do you think is going to happen?
You know, I still do have some hope that I'll be rehired. We're still going to be putting the pressure on. I mean, they put a lot of work into firing me, so it's going to be a lot of work to reverse it. But, you know, we're not going to give up. And regardless, you know, they kind of like fired the wrong person. Like, I'm not going away. I'm dedicated to this campaign, whether I'm working there or not. So I'm going to be there to, you know, support my coworkers, support Burgerville workers at other stores. And you know, I have a solid crew of coworkers that are still down, still there at my store holding down the union. And that's what this is all about, you know, like building a organization that can stand, even if they, you know, fire off one, two, however many of us, you know.
Exactly.
So yep, just gonna keep on fighting.
Cool. Well, any kind of far-reaching analysis or thoughts you have, both just of, you know, the perspectives of class war militants in the age of Trump, but also just with just Burgerville in itself, the campaign that lies ahead?
I mean, I think could you repeat?
I was just curious if you could kind of like, I mean, do you have any thoughts looking at, you know, just kind of the horror show that lies ahead under Trump,
right,
both in regards to labor, but everything else. And also just, you know, with the campaign specifically with Burgerville, like, do you have any thoughts in closing of anything you want to bring up?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just, it's going to be important from here on out, for, workers, unionists, the labor movement in general, to like seek out, alternative methods of organizing, to, you know, rely on solidarity rather than assistance from the state, who has, you know, never really been on our side, but only been, you know, some sort of tool for us to use. So, you know, I hope that we see like a further radicalization in the labor movement, and a shift towards more militant tactics. And I think that's what we're going to continue to do in our campaign. We're going to continue to ramp things up. We're not going to give up until we get what we need. So,
cool. Awesome. Is there anything else you want to add as far as how people can support you or Burgerville in general?
So we have our website, burgervilleworkersunion.org. Also, our Facebook is just Burgerville Workers Union. That's our main way of like reaching out to folks. We still have our GoFundMe open for the union benefits program. We'll, you know, you can find the link to that on our website and our Facebook. Keep your eyes on our campaign. If you're in the area, you know, it's great if you could show out for a picket or something,
Cool. Well, we definitely hope that you get your job back and you all continue to build. And it's always great to have you all on. And thanks again. And we'll have to talk to you soon.
For sure. For sure. Thanks for having me on.
Time doesn't wait for me. Time is wasted. We're moving way too slow. Let's go, 'cause we're not getting any younger. Time doesn't wait for me. Time doesn't wait for me. Time
Okay, we're joined here today with Adam. Adam, tell us what's going on in New York. I don't want to say the name of the place you work at because I don't want to get it wrong. But this is it's Ellen's
Stardust Diner.
Okay, and the waiters and waitresses there sing for people that come in. It seems to be kind of like a tourist destination.
Yeah, it's like one of a kind place. We're all Broadway performers. We're all singers and actors, and it's been around for 20 something years, and it's been something of a safe haven for artists and actors to, in between shows and before they launch their Broadway careers, to come and be able to perform and still pay our rent. And it's a very special, magical place.
And that's part of the gimmick, right? Like, you go there and you know people are going to sing and you're going to hear them sing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, we are a fully functioning diner, and so we're waiters, the same as, like, we serve tables, we get drinks and all that stuff, but we also sing at the same time.
Wow, that sounds like an intense place to work. I mean, most
it
people...
really is.
Most people don't even want to smile when they're at work, let alone sing, so... My hat goes
Yeah, it's
you.
It can be fun. It can be, like, a lot of fun. It can also be very stressful.
Gotcha.
But it's... Yeah, it's a fun place to work.
Gotcha. Okay, well, take us back. So we're talking today about there's a campaign that's been launched by the Industrial Workers of the World to form a union at this diner. Management has responded by, up until now, from what I see, 31 people have been fired.
We're at 32 now.
Oh, wow. So just take us...
It keeps climbing.
Just take us back. How did this start, and why did people decide to... I mean, the idea of forming a union at a service job is almost like... asking for your pay to get fired in some way. So
right.
tell us, take us back to the beginning and how this started.
The staff at the diner, other than most restaurant places, have very high turnover in New York City. So people work at a place for a little while, and then if you're mistreated or if management starts to get crazy, you'll quit and find another restaurant job. And that is kind of the culture of being a server in New York City. But Stardust is special because we kind of feel more like a cast and more of a family than other places that I've served at. And so in January, the company had new management come in, the same ownership, but a new manager came in. And the conditions got very hostile for us very quickly. And got very difficult for us, and there was a lot of terminations on things that seemed quite arbitrary. Like, there was no clear policy of how to stay employed there, and people had the average time that people had served there was 3-4 years, and up to someone who'd worked there for 20 years. And so very slowly, like very quietly, and through a lot of individual conversations, a few people started throwing around the idea of standing together and seeing if we could improve the work conditions there. And so that was in January we started, and the union went live, like we went public, at the end of August. So it took slowly building support and working out what kind of union we wanted to be, settling with the IWW and deciding on the model of being a solidarity union. And then we went live in August. And initially, we really had hoped that it would be received well by the company. And, we've been there for a very long time, and we really treated that place like our home and like our safe haven in the city. And so when we went live with an article in New York Times, the owner responded that he was looking forward to talking to us and hearing our concerns. And instead of that, he quickly fired, within a week or two of us going live, he fired 16 servers. And then we started. And so we've kind of been fighting a really tough battle since then.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And so those 16 people were fired, and we had a lot of new servers come in, and we trained them, we worked with them side by side over the Christmas holidays, which gets very, very busy. We have like a line all day every day, and hundreds and hundreds of people come through the diner, and we made it through the Christmas holidays, like crawling through with the servers we had left, and still organizing, still doing demonstrations and going through all that fun union stuff. And then just after the Christmas holidays, when things slowed down, they fired another 16 people. So that time over email. And that's kind of where we are now. And I think something that's incredible about our campaign and this, how proud I am of everyone that I'm standing beside and working with, and the solidarity that these people have generated, is that we have a set of servers, about 60 people, and currently they have fired 32. So like half of the staff, of the serving staff, has been fired, and yet the union is still growing. It's still strong. We're still standing up for the rights of everyone who works at that place, and we're not looking at stopping anytime soon.
Well, let's go back a little bit. Why industrial workers of the world? Why not SEIU or the Teamsters or somebody else? Why IWW?
We wanted to have a model that let us retain some control, and so we wanted it to, membership is voluntary, and you don't have to pay dues. Obviously, we're happy for people to support because it goes towards helping the campaign succeed.
Right.
We're a branch of the IWW, but we set our own bylaws, and it really is just the workers of the restaurant trying to better the conditions. And I actually wasn't on the committee from the very beginning. I came in a little bit later. So for those like first initial conversations when they were deciding on the IWW, I wasn't actually there. So I can't tell you exactly why, but
right.
It's a solidarity union is what we wanted to do from the very beginning, because we were such a family and we already have such solidarity to begin with.
At some small businesses, a lot of workers feel a camaraderie with their boss. So, for better or for worse, was there apprehension by people to get involved in something like this because of that close connection with management?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had people who'd be there for a very long time, and I think what was important when we were initially starting was that we didn't want anyone to feel like we wanted to burn the place down, or we were like angry, or we loved that place probably more than anybody. And we needed to really like share with each other. And then we hoped that management would, and the owners would jump on board as well, is that really we want to, like, if we can improve the conditions for the servers and for everybody, the back of house, all the support staff and everyone who walks through that door, the goal is that the customers will have a better experience. And so really, I don't feel like I'm against the restaurant. I feel like I'm for the restaurant, and that them coming and, getting on board with us will actually serve everybody.
Right.
And so like any initial hesitations between people who are scared of like the idea of a union kind of dispersed as we really spoke about what we were fighting for.
That's great. The 16 people that were fired originally, was that like perceived leaders or people that were involved in organizing? And like, I don't know, it seems like if they fired that many people, how are they going to continue to run an operation that, requires people to sing and put on a show? And
right. Yeah. So the initial people, one of the only reasons I my opinion that I'm still currently there is that I was away doing a show at the time of when the union went live. Mm-hmm. And when we first went live, they called a lot of people down. We had about a week and a half of like union busting meetings, where We had like big scary lawyers like tell us about why unions are bad for the workers and why it's better for there not to be a union. And the kind of what we feel is that in those meetings they were sussing out who was well-spoken, who was not scared to speak up, and who was going to the demonstrations. And then from those meetings, and they then fired a lot of the organizers. Like, basically the people who started the union were all gone in that first set of 16. And they were also the people who were very influential in the restaurant because they had been there for a long time, because people respected them, because they were amazing performers. And there is actually this incredible photo that's from our very first demonstration where we're outside singing a song, and we have a big banner that says "We are Stardust" and mm-hmm. and the Stardust Family United logo. And someone went through, and after that first set of firings, every single person who's in that photo who was fired, they just put like a red dot over their face. Jeez. And there is no one, who was a red. No one in that photo is currently still employed.
Wow.
Except for one girl who's like kind of her face is half hidden. So it's one of those incredible things where a restaurant, you know, we're going through that whole thing of with the labor board and saying how these people have been illegally terminated for forming a union. Mm-hmm. And the first time I saw that photo, I like got chills at how like outrageously illegal their behavior has been.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about, you brought up the idea of a solidarity union, you know, people standing together, you know, for basic things at the workplace. Can you talk more about, like, as people were fired, you said the union actually grew. How did that actually happen?
Yeah. So, initially the first set of 16, a lot of people were very scared after that, and it confused a lot of people. And we're also going into the busiest time of year. So it's when new people are on the floor and when new people were training, the restaurant was chaotic at that point. And a lot of people who were supportive of the idea got understandably scared, and we kind of like shrunk away. And it took us a lot of conversations and a lot of like, we had to start small again. And so really the people that remained just had to stick together and start with small things. Like it took some bravery for people to be able to wear a union badge, wear a pin. Mm-hmm. And then once that happened, we were like, okay, so like what else can we achieve? I think what is really exciting for us going forward now is that the second set of firings didn't set us back as much as the first one did. Like, mm-hmm. the first set of firings scared people and made people shy, and we needed to like slowly build from there. The second set of firings, even from people who were brand new at the diner, brand new members of the union, that emboldened us, and it made us see how incredibly unjust and wrong what was happening there was, and really solidified the need for a union. And so within now, when people are joining, the new people who are joining the diner today, who are training, are the culture of the diner is changing to be very much on our side, and so we have to convince people a lot less. And I mean, it's not easy, but there are people who are brand new to the diner who have only worked a couple of shifts, who are, I'm about to go to a meeting now, who are about to come to a meeting and you know, pay dues and come together to improve the workplace for all of us.
That's awesome. Can you talk a little bit about the pickets you all have done? And you also have called for a boycott of the establishment. Talk about that.
Yeah. So this last set of firings, when I was talking about it making us bold, we had our first ULP shift strike last Friday.
where we had an entire set of servers walk out of the diner in protest for the unfair labor practices and the illegal terminations. And we have called for a boycott for customers who support us. And just on Monday, we had a picket for the trucks to stop to stop trucks being able to supply the restaurant with food.
Are those workers unionized too, or are they?
So here's the on Monday when we picketed the trucks, we had the trucks. Some are unionized, and the Teamsters. We had a truck from Cisco come, who was a Teamster driver, and we've had a lot of support from people, and the Teamsters have said that they support us. Unfortunately, on Monday, the driver made the delivery and crossed our picket, and which is pretty disappointing. And we have had so much support from people, but ultimately we're a bunch of theater kids, we're doing this like we've never done this before, and we've had a lot of support from the union movement, because they see this as an important moment for unions in the country, but also in New York City. Like, New York is a union town, and to have a truck driver who was part of the Teamsters make that delivery was really disappointing for us. And so we really are calling for the support from everybody. Like, we're singers and dancers. And when we started our demonstrations and our protests, we really were we're singing a lot of Seasons of Love from Rent. And we were singing The Tower, which is a song that one of our members wrote.
That's the one Tom Morello just played, right?
Yeah, Tom Morello just did a cover of, and it's really become an anthem for us about, it's an incredible song. Look it up. It's on all of our,
we'll play it on the podcast.
Protest videos. Yeah. It's really, that's how we started this, from us using our voices and singing. And now we're at the point where we're doing pickets, and we're learning about how to stay in good stead with the police, and when they try to shut us down, knowing our rights and knowing what we are allowed to do and what protects us. And that's where we are now. We had a strike where we walked out. We've had pickets against the trucks. We're calling for a boycott. Things have really stepped up in the last few weeks.
What's the response been from customers? Because I assume that it sounds like there's a lot of tourists, but I'm guessing there's probably some people that you know by name and face that come in there all the time.
Yeah, we've had people coming there for years and years, and the special thing about Ellen's is that the food is not what draws people to the place. the reason that people come there, the reason that it's famous, it's on all the lists of things to do when you come to New York, is because of the performers and because of the singing and the show that gets put on. And so what's been very encouraging from customers is that they sell the place as a safe haven for artists. And if the customers see that that is not the case, that the workers are being mistreated, are being randomly fired, if they don't feel safe, the customers are on our side a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And there's a really special moment for me with what's going on, and that I think really sets the tone for our entire our goal, is when we were having a protest and when we walked out on the ULP strike on Friday. And so there was no one singing inside, and this little boy wearing a Batman mask was turned up with his parents, and his parents were asking what was going on. Mm-hmm. And he said, they were he really just wanted to come here for his birthday. And we're like, well, we'll sing you a song. What do you want? Hey, Batman, what do you want us to sing? And he was he just wants us to sing happy birthday. So we walked this this little six-year-old boy over to the front of the like the pig pen that they put us in, and an entire like set of people sung Happy Birthday to Batman, and it was like the people that are like fighting for the rights, like we're all good, hardworking people, and we love that place and we love the customers, and the reason that we're fighting is as much for the customer experience as it is for us, because when the workers start to be mistreated, the customer experience goes down.
Right.
And that's important to us.
Is there, I think you brought this up a little bit before, but is this connected with people that are in the kitchen that are washing dishes? Is this just people that are singing the songs out in the front? Or, because I mean, anybody that's worked in a restaurant or knows how restaurants works knows that there's this historical, especially racial divide between people that work in the back and people that work in the front. And so what's that like?
Yeah. So initially when we started, we had a lot of support from the support staff in the back of house. They have been mistreated and their conditions we're fighting for as much as ours. So initially we had a lot of support. When we went live and they started the union busting meetings, that we lost a lot of visible and active support. There's a lot of reasons for that. But in the meetings, they would talk about like the union requiring their like social and like people come wanting their address and, you know, people from immigration getting the information. And there's a lot of like dirty tactics that have been used to really shake up the support from the back of house. And it's something that is, you know, such a challenge for us to make sure that we are really fighting for everyone in the restaurant. It's not just the people singing. It's the bartenders. It's the busses. It's the runners and the kitchen staff. Like we're really fighting for the conditions for everybody. And we will continue to do that, and hopefully we'll get more and more support as that moves along, and you know, where we end up.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. I just think it's inspiring, you know, at a time when a lot of, you know, bigger mainstream business unions are slashing their budgets because they know what's coming under Trump. You know, it's really great to see you all take the initiative and really develop, you know, really autonomous and solidarity style organizing campaign that, I mean, anybody could pick this up. Anybody could be doing this in their workplace, you know, regardless of whatever the legal status of the union is.
Exactly. And that's what's something that we really try to like drum into everybody is that, you know, the NLRB hasn't come to save us. And there has been incredible unfair labor practices and illegal behavior from the company, but the law hasn't like swooped in and saved us. What has like kept us strong and keeps us going is that just like us wanting to improve the workplace and us keep like continuing to strive for that together as a unit with people who are part of the union or not, people who pay dues or not. We're just, our goal is to make this the best workplace that it can possibly be, and to hold management accountable for illegal and inappropriate behavior. And I think that solidarity unionism is really, for me, I knew nothing about this. I'm from Australia. It's, you know, the union movement in America was all new to me. But like on the ground, learning this as we go, it really is powerful.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I mean, I would tell if you're in New York, don't eat at Ellen's, Stardust Diner.
Don't eat at Ellen's.
or come over and join the pickets. Check out you guys have social media. Facebook is a good
place to stay up. We do. Yeah. So we're Stardust Family United is the name of the union. And so we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on all those things. And we're calling for a boycott until we sort this all out. But our demonstrations and our picket lines are pretty damn musical. So if you do want to have some fun and stand with us, come on down.
Cool. Thanks a lot for joining us and good luck.
Of course.
To all.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks to Jordan. Thanks to Adam for coming on. It was great to have both of you. I had an amazing time talking to y'all. It's great to hear what's going on where they're working. you want to know more, go to IWW.org. You can always check out itsgoingdown.org to see up-to-the-minute reports and analysis and podcasts. Right now, we're going to hear Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine play the song that Adam was talking about. And we want to say a special shout-out to everybody that's been donating, sustaining, helping us continue. We have sent out about 3 shirts a day as gifts for people that have been donating. So it has been an insane time here. It's insane amount of hits, insane amount of interest, and it's going down. Thanks to everybody. You are the heart of this project, and you're ensuring that we'll be here next time. Here's Tom Morello.
Hello, Ellen Stardust Diner, all my brothers and sisters in the IWW there. My name's Tom Morello. I'd like to thank you for your excellent work in the struggle for a more just and humane Times Square. You guys wrote a pretty great song there, and I liked it, so I'm going to try to play it for you. Play it back at you. There was a shining tower sitting high upon a hill, and the people in its shadow gave their all to serve its will. The tower, it was beautiful, the people, they were good. Said the people to the tower, we will praise you as we should. People rose singing, thank you God for this unearthly thing. Yeah, they rose to the heavens of your majesty will sing. They sang, we are the people, we sing as one. We sing for all the beauty here and all the good that can be done. Yes, we are the people and we stand strong. We stand for who we are and what we may become. We are a family, our love won't be undone. Voices of the tower pushed the tower to the sky, but the tower was ungrateful, all the backs on which it thrived. The people, they grew tired, the tower, it grew tall, so tall among the clouds it could not see the ground at all. People rose up, singing, tower, don't forget that we are here. Yeah, they rose up, but the tower was so tall it could not hear. They sang, we are the people, we sing as one. We sing for all the beauty here and all the good that can be done. Yes, we are the people and we stand strong. Stand for who we are and what we may become. We are a family, our love won't be undone. As the years went by, the people wanted to be heard, but the tower did not care to hear a word. So the people, they continued with their song. But the words had changed, for they knew that they'd been wrong. They sang, you once were a beacon to us all. But you're broken now, your time has come to fall. Then they rose up, holding on to one another without fear. Yeah, they rose up, and the tower heard, the people's word was clear. They sang, we are the people, we sing as one. We sing for all the beauty here and all the good that can be done. Yes, we are the people and we stand strong. Stand for who we are and what we may become. We are a family, our love won't be undone. As the tower came tumbling down, it begged to stay alive. Said the people to the tower, we want everyone to thrive. If you'll just treat us right and give our songs a welcome ear, then we'll sing you to the heavens once more. Sing it loud and clear. Yeah, we, so what, the people rose up, holding on to one another without fear. Yeah, they rose up, and the tower heard, the people's word was clear. They sang, we are the people, we sing as one. We sing for all the beauty here and all the good that can be done. Yes, we are the people, and we stand strong. We stand for who we are and who we may become. We are a family, our love won't be undone. They sang, we are the people, we sing. sing as one. We sing for all the beauty here and all the good that can be done. Yes, we are the people and we stand strong. We stand for who we are and who we may become. We are a family, our love won't be undone. Solidarity. Give them hell.